Yeah, Capone's, they don't make them do a lot. So they keep it really simple for them. Nice college offense. Kingsbury's the OC, so you know, a little move guys around here and there. But, you know, just keep it real simple for them. I heard his pass percentage is very high, but he's only throwing short route, you know, some intermediate stuff, quick throws.
Cam Taylor Britt, the Cincinnati corner who had a great interception on Patrick Mahomes last Sunday, basically talking about Washington's college offense and how they have simplified it for Jaden in these first 2 weeks. Doesn't seem to be super threatened by what Washington's bringing in to town. There are a lot of offenses that look like Washington's in the NFL right now, but that's another subject. Ben Standing's usually with us at noon on Mondays and Fridays. He'll join us from, I'm guessing you'll be in Cincinnati when we talk to you on Monday, right?
Yes, Cincinnati or possibly Kentucky. If I'm, that's where my hotel is. I'm kind of excited. I've never been to Kentucky before, so there you go.
Well, the airport in Cincinnati is in Kentucky. A lot of people don't know that.
I honestly didn't until I booked this trip. I've never been to Cincinnati either, so.
I had to go to Cincinnati a lot. Kroger, which at one point, I don't know if it's still true, was the largest supermarket chain in the country, was a huge client of mine. They were based in Cincinnati. I think there was like a 8-9 year period, 10-year period where I was in Cincinnati once a month, once every 2 months. You can have Cincinnati, honestly. It's fine. It's like a lot of other Ohio cities. Cleveland's actually got some beautiful areas. Cincinnati's not terrible. But the airport is in Kentucky, which is where a lot of the airport hotels are as well. So enjoy your first trip to Kentucky. Lexington's beautiful, beautiful. Louisville, not so much. All right. I did want to actually start with something that I saw that you tweeted out. It was Jason Kelce on Philadelphia radio, I think, making a comment about Josh Harris's other team, or one of his other teams, the Philadelphia 76ers, where they are trying to get a new arena built downtown, and it's not been easy. You tweeted out what Jason Kelce said. Share it with everybody.
Well, I mean, the basic, so I think there's a couple of things. So if you've ever been to Philadelphia, it's a very unique setup. They have all the four teams, the main pro sports teams, are all located in the exact same spot on this big complex, which is pretty fascinating. And I'm sure for fans, it's all probably, you know, great. It's a great situation. You know exactly where to go and all that. But Josh Harris does not own the arena where the Sixers play, and he, you know, wants that for the, you know, all the obvious reasons he'd want to own a building. So he's trying to build one downtown in their downtown, and people don't really want this because it would, in part, because it would break up that setup there. The other aspect of this is, if he can't get a team built, if he can't get the arena built downtown, the other location seems to be across the river in Camden, New Jersey, which is, you know, not far from where they are, but, you know, sort of, this is a little bit like what Ted Leontis was doing with, you know, possibly moving Cap One to Virginia. So, yeah, Jason Kelce was like, look, I know eventually we'd all be fine with it, but right now I just hate the idea because there's this tradition and all that. And this feels like a much, like right now everybody's like happy-go-lucky here about, oh, we want Josh Harris, it's all great, just build a new stadium. We almost kind of don't care where it is, but prefer RFK, we almost don't care. They're like, no. Don't do this. Don't move. But yeah, it feels like, you know, it seems like Harris is, you know, wants to get this done, but there's definitely a lot of opposition.
I mean, is it a fair description to say that he is not a popular owner of the Philadelphia 76ers with Philadelphians?
Yeah, it seems that way. I mean, I'm not there. I'm not emotionally tied to it. I've always been a big proponent of the process, but even that, now it's been a while. You know, you can't keep talking about that to a certain degree. But yeah, look, they have, they haven't gotten over the hump. They haven't gotten out of the second round, despite the fact that with Joel Embiid, they've turned into one of the top contenders in the league year over year, 50 win seasons. But yeah, it hasn't gotten. They haven't gotten further. You know how it is, fans. At some point, winning in the regular season isn't enough. And now, you know, now this aspect of it. And one of the things Kelce said, I don't know if it was in the clip I retweeted or it was a different one, but he said, hey, look, you know, I don't know that this Josh Harris cares about Philadelphia, right? He owns a team in New Jersey. He He's not from here. He owns now another team in Washington. Like, it's not like he's of here, which is ironic in the sense that one of the reasons I think Josh Harris is a favorable person here is because he is one of the fans, right? I mean, he grew up here. He knows the history. Same with, you know, Mitch Rales. Like, there is a connection there, and I think that's partly why people, liked his ownership group. Yes, I'm aware that the last owner was also from here, but, you know. I think that's the irony here, that here he's one of us, so to speak, and then up there he's an outsider who now wants to change things that we like here.
Yeah, the quote from Jason Kelsey on, I think it was WIP Radio, quote, they're strong-arming the city. What do you do? Do you risk losing the 76ers? It just sucks. The ownership group isn't Philadelphian. He's got a New Jersey Devils team, a Philadelphia team, and now a Washington team. And now they're forcing the city to do what this guy wants, and it sucks. That's Jason Kelsey, you know, Monday Night Countdown. He'll be with Scott and their Monday Night Countdown group, not in Cincinnati, but in Bristol, because there are two games, as Scott told us the other night. When there are two games, they do the show from Bristol. But we'll see what Jason Kelsey says about Washington's chances and Washington's new franchise here, because clearly he's not a big fan of Josh Harris. But just so everybody understands, what Ben said, I believe is true. Like, this is his dream, you know, property that he owns. This is what he grew up rooting for. You know, it's the 76ers and the Devils ownership is also part of Harris Blitzer, and Blitzer more, you know, isn't necessarily a DC guy. Blitzer's a New York guy or a Philly guy? I'm forgetting now.
Oh, I'm not positive. But
he's
Harris
not.
Obviously has ties.
Go ahead.
Okay. No, I was going to say Harris has some ties to that area from college days. But, I'm not 100% sure where Blitzer's from, but somewhere, up the 95 corridor.
Yeah, Blitzer grew up in Jersey. He's a Jersey guy and went to Wharton, where I'm assuming that's where he met Josh Harris. All right, let's move to football and Monday night. Let me just start with this, and I know that you don't think this is a big topic, and I'm kind of with you on this, but do you think Jamin Davis will be active and will have a role in the game Monday night against Cincinnati? And can you identify specifically the reason he didn't play last week for everybody that may have missed it?
Well, to the latter point, just going off of what Dan Quinn told us, they knew that Johnny Newton was going to play but be limited. He ultimately only played 12 snaps, so they wanted to have an extra defensive tackle option. So they brought up Carlos Watkins from the practice squad, and that led them to having to make a decision. We have to drop one of the defensive ends we have, and they went with Jamin Davis, and they kept up Javonte Jean-Baptiste, the seventh-round pick. I think that is notable in and of itself. So, now, ironically, Carlos Watkins is gone. The Cowboys picked him up off Washington's practice squad this week. And Quinn told us today or yesterday that Johnny Newton is going to get more snaps this week. I don't know how much more, but he'll get more. So based on that, they still have another defensive tackle they could bring up if they wanted to off the practice squad, but I would assume they may not if Newton's going to play more, and therefore Jamin Davis, I would guess, will be active this week. But, he's a guy that played 12 snaps in the opener. I think he was definitely on the bubble to make the roster, and he's been asked to switch positions for, the second time in his 4 years. I think, he was a first-round pick, but to a certain degree, it is sort of a sunk cost at this point, especially with the new group. So I don't know that he's got, favored nation status the way I think people are kind of hoping because of the first-round pick. But that said, he has improved over the summer, and he did make some good plays in the opener. So I would think he'd be active this week. Unless the Johnny Newton thing is, more of a red herring that Quinn was throwing out there.
You said something to me earlier this week when we were talking, not on the air. You had kind of predicted early on that Jamin Davis, before anybody was really talking about it, that Jamin Davis could be one of those possible, in the moment, which would have been like March or April, a surprise cut. And then, they had these issues at corner. Tariq Castro Fields in particular played pretty well. He was one of the first players picked up off of waivers. How close do you think it was with Jamin Davis making the team?
Well, I think the surprise there, and I think for most of us, was that they let go KJ Henry. I didn't see that. He seemed to, again, I'm not saying he was going to become an ultimate starter in this league, but he seemed like an ascending player, not just at the end of last year, but even this summer. He was playing high in the rotation all training camp, and then they let him go. So I thought that Henry would be ahead of Jamin Davis. Obviously, they viewed it differently, and that was a big difference there. But, yeah, I have to believe that Jamin Davis was, you know, in that discussion of, like, well, what should we do here? I do think so. Well, one thing I found interesting, I think we talked about this also, was that this is the minutiae stuff that I care about. You know, they kept Byron Pringle on the original 53, right? Let KJ Henry go. Let Tariq Cascarfield go. Not that he was like a dynamic corner, but give you more depth at a position they are clearly weak at. They let both of those guys go to keep Pringle, who they then cut the Friday before the week one. And I thought, well, maybe this is one of those deals where they don't want to guarantee the veteran contract or bring him back. Obviously, they haven't. So it's very weird that they kept the guy who they then cut before the season started and let go two young guys who I would think at a minimum you could, you know, keep and see what you have. Obviously, they moved on. I would love to know the reasoning for that, because I don't know why you couldn't have kept KJ Henry as well instead of cutting a guy that you ultimately decided to move on for him right before the season started.
KJ Henry actually has played in the first two games, or he played against Kansas City, played 12% of the snaps for the Bengals. So they will see KJ Henry on Monday night. Castro Fields has been active too for the Panthers, or at least was last week. And defensively, let's see how many snaps he got, if anybody really cares.
I don't know if he played any.
He was special. He was a special teams player last week for them. But he's on their roster and has been active, or was active on Sunday. All right. We don't have to spend a lot of time on this one either. But we've talked about this, together, and we haven't. I don't think we talked about it on Monday when you were on, but you've asked some of the questions. You asked some of the questions of Dan Quinn, I think yesterday, about the Terry McLaurin production. So what is your opinion on 4.9 yards per reception, 6 catches last week for 22 yards, and kind of the slow start to 2024 for number 17?
Yeah, look, you know, this is a deja vu all over again situation, talking about Terry McLaurin needing to get him the ball more. You know, at the end of the day, every year he gets 1,000 yards, can make some big plays, and then, you know, we're always going, okay, well, you know, be more consistent. And I think for me what sort of triggered a new thought on this was last week, where Malik Nabers in his second game, you know, he's considered to be, you know, he was the number 6 pick, looks like he's going to be one of the bigger, better receivers in the league. He had 18 targets last week. That's more than Terry McLaurin has ever had. McLaurin's had 14 a couple of times, and they just kept force-feeding the ball. So I've been trying to think, like, or ask questions, okay, why is it that some teams can get the ball to a guy, even though the defense knows where it's going to go, where other times they can't? And, you know, the answers I've gotten both from a little bit from Dan Quinn and others is, well, you know, you can move the player around the formation, and, you know, sometimes teams are willing to just throw the ball to a certain guy, and other teams say, no, tell your quarterback, throw it to the open guy, no matter who it is. And I think that's what they've been telling Jaden Daniels. They're not telling him to force it. I think what's going to be interesting, you know, not now, but as we go through this season, is, you know, this is now, what, Terry's 7th year? Or 20, you know, so right, 7th year? Or 6th year? Since 2019. And every single year, right, it's a different week one quarterback. He's now had 4 different offensive coordinators. He never has had a much help at the other receiver spots, right? But, like, at some point, you got to have to sort of ask the question, is this guy, you know, just not that guy? Like, he's not the guy you're going to, you know, dominate with touches or targets. And, you know, Terry is fast, but he's not the fastest receiver in the league. He's okay with size, but he's definitely not, like, a big receiver. His best plays has always been in these contested catches, like these lobs that sort of Taylor Heinicke would throw his way. But those are the passes that are scary, because you're depending on the receiver to make a play when he's not necessarily open. So that's not where their eyes go. So I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, how this goes. It's obviously been a very slow start. And, you know, but at least last week, the offense, you know, still picked up over 400 yards. Noah Brown was a big help. I think his role is going to increase. I would imagine. I wrote about him today for The Athletic. Look, Zach Ertz has made plays. The two running backs are obviously factors in the passing game. So they have a couple other options. But, yeah, how they spring McLaurin open or, do they have to kind of rethink his role? I'm not saying they do, but I think it's going to be interesting as we go through the next few weeks.
I watched the Jaden Daniels presser from yesterday, and I thought it was interesting. He talked about Terry, but then when it got to Noah Brown, the thing that he immediately said was he gets separation. And I think he said he was impressed with, kind of the work ethic, the whole thing, but he emphasized separation. I'm sure you picked up on that, but you've also written about Noah Brown in The Athletic here today. I'm assuming that there's a really good chance that Noah Brown ends up getting a lot more snaps and a lot more opportunities.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, I did pick up on that separation comment. And look, it could be a very innocuous comment, but since it's on the brain, we've all been talking about this now for the last couple of years at least, where's the separation or why are guys open? And then Noah Brown delivered some of that. I wrote him today. I knew probably like many, I knew he was on the Cowboys, but didn't think too much about him. He was mostly a special teams guy for his career. Last year, fantasy football players certainly knew of him when he had two monster games. One game he had like 173 yards, another one about 150. But what happened to him with Houston was the same thing that's happened to him his whole career going back to Ohio State. Injuries. Every time it seems like he's about to break out as a receiver, something happened. Urban Meyer, because he went to, he was the coach when Noah Brown went to Ohio State the same year with Curtis Samuel and Terry McLaurin. And, Urban Meyer told me that, hey, look, this guy, he had the best overall skill set of any of those guys. He was our toughest receiver. He had great hand-eye coordination. But then in 2015, right when he was about to start or play a big role, he shatters his leg. And that just led to a whole bunch of injuries over his career, including, again, last year with Houston. He helps them win the division, get to the playoffs, and then he only plays five snaps in two playoff games because of a shoulder injury that led to surgery that ultimately led, I think, to Houston moving on from him. But, this is a really good opportunity. We know that the receiver hierarchy after McLaurin is very unsettled. He gives them a big body that they don't have, and he does have some playmaking ability, even if he's not going to be the fastest guy out there. So, yeah, if he and Jaden Daniels get on a good get some good chemistry. If what we saw last week is, a harbinger of things to come, I think Noah Brown could get interesting. And not to mention, his ability as a blocker, for a team that is now looking like their identity is going to be the two running backs, not to mention the quarterback that runs, I think having Noah Brown out there is a pretty big deal. Like, De'Ami Brown is willing to block, but he weighs like 30 pounds less than Noah Brown. So, I think Noah Brown is in line for an expanded role for sure. Hopefully, for his sake, this is a time where he can stay healthy and not have any setbacks that have unfortunately plagued him throughout his career.
Do they have pretty good health heading into this game? Am I missing somebody that won't be available? I'm just trying to think through this right now. I mean, are they pretty healthy for Monday night?
Yeah, I mean, because it's a weird week, so today's only the second practice. So,
right.
There were a few guys who were on the injury report yesterday. Benjamin St. Juice was one that stood out. I think it was a groin. We had not seen him on the injury report, so that's one to see. But, like Quan Martin, who was also on the injury report last week, including Farrell, they're both on it again, but they both played last week, so I'm not assuming too much there. But, yeah, by and large, they seem to be in pretty good shape, other than obviously the Emmanuel Forbes situation. He wasn't put on IR, but I can't imagine he's going to play. Next week will be the interesting one for him because it'll be the third week, and if you go on IR, you're out four. So we would think they're maybe targeting next week. But, yeah, other than that, they seem to be, in pretty good shape, and that's, kind of the way it's been all summer for them. So knock on wood, hopefully they keep that up.
All right, we will wait until Monday to kind of get your preview and pick. But I'll just ask you today, do you have a good feeling or not about Monday night? How much of a chance do you give them?
Well, I do think this is a very interesting game. It's so weird. The first week and maybe the first 2 weeks of the NFL season now, it's so hard to read because nobody plays in the preseason, right? So, everybody's like, the first two games are almost, advanced preseason games in the sense that, like, now these guys are getting out there, so the results can be kind of wonky. Obviously, Washington was pretty miserable in the first game. Last week, they won. But, you know, they squeaked it out against a Giants team that nobody thinks is any good. The Bengals are 0-2, and they lost to New England in the first game. New England looks terrible. But they also just were a pass interference call away from beating Kansas City last week. So this is a team, despite the 0-2, I still would say is an AFC contender. And, you know, Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, they haven't gotten going yet. T. Higgins might be back this week. They've got injuries on the defensive tackle side, which maybe helps Washington's run game. But this is a stern test despite the 0-2. So I think if Washington comes out there and there's competitive, win or lose, that's going to bode well for me. But right now, I just think the Bengals have more stuff. And I just think that the Joe Burrow, Chase, and a healthy T. Higgins, and they got a lot of tight ends that can catch against that secondary, that scares me more than whatever else Washington can do to them. But, yeah, we'll see what the health looks like for both teams on Monday.
All right, we will talk on Monday at Ben Standig on X on Twitter. Ben Standig writes for The Athletic, which, as I say every time Ben is on, is totally worth the couple bucks a month that you pay for it with, and he's got a podcast called Last Man Standig. Thanks. Talk to you Monday in Cincinnati.
I look forward to it. I'm going to see if turkeys can fly while I'm there.
See ya. Ben Standig, everybody. We'll do some Denton news, which will include the incredible season and the incredible game that Shohei Ohtani had last night. That's next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We are free and live on the Odyssey app.